Atlanta at one stretch with 7 minutes to go led in this game 95-88, and the Milwaukee Bucks have defeated the Atlanta Hawks 113-102. Still 12 seconds remaining, but this one is over.
That's the sound of the Milwaukee Bucks taking a 2-1 lead over the Hawks in the Eastern Conference Finals. The game brought us a second shimmy from Trae Young and a very unfortunately placed foot from an official. On the Bucks side, Middleton was money and Giannis was reminded how to count to 10. Well, more like 12. Meanwhile, at the Staples Center, the Suns earned a chance to win the West. We'll talk about what got them this far. I'm Sarah Spain, in for Pablo Torre. It's Monday, June 28th. This is ESPN Daily.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Brian, do not check your headphones. This is indeed Sarah Spain and not our good friend and colleague, Pablo Torre, who I might add will be very heartened to know that the Sixers did make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, at least in the form of Dwight Howard, who was sitting courtside, which to me sort of felt like a rejected bachelor suitor popping up three episodes later, sitting on a couch in the fantasy suite. But I digress. That one's for my bachelor watchers. Brian, nice to talk to you on a totally different show.
I have to say that was weird. you do sometimes see players come to playoff games and sit courtside. I've seen it many times. But it's unusual to come see the team that just eliminated you from the playoffs.
Brian Windhorst is a senior writer for ESPN and host of the Hoop Collective podcast.
Even though it's your hometown and it's in their building, it's just a little bit... I scratched my head, but Dwight Howard's been... making me do that routinely for about a decade and a half now.
Ain't that the truth? Can we also address the fact that it looked like the Bucks were cosplaying as the Mavs tonight?
I'm going to tell you something. As well as the Bucks played in Game 3, I would bet on seeing those blue uniforms back in Game 4.
They might be back. You're right. The secondary color of blue, a nod to the Great Lakes, and perhaps what Chris Middleton's eyes looked like throughout this game. Giant blue saucers of everything going down. Let's talk about the game. The Bucks get the win, 113-102. It started with Trae Young going off. He was you know, postseason high, 14 points in the first, knocking down threes from the logo.
Now Young with a deep three, and I mean deep.
That was like a 35-footer.
At halftime, the game is tied. How did the Bucks survive that initial onslaught from the Hawks?
The Bucks have just owned the paint in this series. They have dominated. They weren't quite as good in Game 3 as they were in Game 2. In Game 2, they were 24 of 28 shooting in the paint. And so while Trae Young was hitting those threes, in fact, the Hawks made a bunch of threes in general in the first half, the Bucks were going along, plodding along, and getting those baskets in the paint. And that kept them going for the second half when their outside shots started falling, particularly Chris Middleton.
The game turned and became less about trading baskets when Trae Young's ankle gets twisted, landing on the foot of an official late in the third quarter. First off, have you ever seen anything like that?
I'm trying to remember. I mean, I have seen guys get hurt on various apparatuses around the court over the years. The most terrible one was Paul George running into the basket standard in Las Vegas in an exhibition game with Team USA. Remember seeing LeBron James run over the pregnant wife of PGA golfer Jason Day and having her have to leave on a stretcher. I've seen strange things around a court. But I have to say the idea of a star player, you know, spraining his ankle on the foot of a referee in the you know, late stages of a vital playoff game, that one is definitely for the books. And what happened was there was a turnover, and Trey was probably a little frustrated from the turnover, and he went to reach his foot back to plant to reverse his field, and it just landed on the referee. It was a bit of an unnatural move by Trey Young because he stuck his foot way back, but really it was just a bit of unfortunate luck. And, you know, he did, you know, leave the game at that point, but that's normally when he would have left the game. He normally comes out at the end of the third quarter and sits for the first 4 or 5 minutes of the fourth. He sat for about the first 3.5 minutes of the fourth. So he didn't actually lose any time in the game. And, you know, he didn't shoot the ball very well afterwards. Only he knows how that ankle affected that.
Yeah, you know, I would say probably many people believe that's a bigger turning point in the game than you seem to think it was. There was a big run for the Bucks that was concurrent with Trey going out with that injury. And even when he returned, there was the dominance to the Milwaukee game that seemed pretty secure by then. You're of the opinion that perhaps they could have pulled that off based solely on Middleton shooting and their defensive choices, even if Trey had been healthy?
Yeah, there was a couple of things that happened, Sarah. You know, like I said, it was his normal rest, and also Danilo Gallinari, who was playing one of the best games he's played in the playoffs. He had gotten a little bit of an extra, minute load there because John Collins had foul trouble, and he got tired, a couple of minutes into the fourth quarter, and he came out of the game for John Collins. And so I think as much as it was Trey maybe being hobbled, I also think Gallinari coming out of the game, it downgraded the Hawks at both ends because Gallo was playing really good defense in this game. And then obviously, Chris Middleton, I mean, this is a guy who is known for going on hot streaks. He's known for being a little bit inconsistent. But even under that knowledge, he was just unconscious shooting the ball down the stretch.
Tucker flips it out, Middleton for three, again! Was a three, no question.
You see a star player have an unconscious game like that in a playoff series, it usually leads to his team winning that game.
Who could have ever imagined, Brian, back in the Fort Wayne Mad Ants days, that he would someday be in the East Finals taking over as the dominant shooter, as the star of the game? Is this the kind of help Giannis has been looking for all of this postseason and, frankly, in each of his playoff runs that have ended early?
Well, here's the truth about the Bucks is that when you're at the end of a close game, it's hard to put the ball in Giannis's hands because he doesn't shoot well from the perimeter and he's a questionable and recently poor free throw shooter. So the Bucks run a lot of their late game offense through Middleton for this reason. And in this way, the Bucks are a shaky late game team. I know that they had that huge Game 7 victory over Milwaukee or over Brooklyn, and that can't be discounted. That was a terrific performance by them. But, you know, normally they do much better when they have a cushion at the end of the game, as any team does, but especially them. And so what Chris Middleton's great shooting allowed the Bucks to do in this game was not have to play possession basketball. They didn't have possessions where they absolutely had to get a bucket. He provided them that cushion, and they're good enough defensively that when they get a cushion, they can put you down because they don't put you down through getting offensive makes. They put you down through getting defensive stops, and that's what happened in this game.
Giannis, efficient when it comes to getting the W and efficient in terms of final numbers, but there was some sloppiness occasionally on the drives. And there is always the question of the free throws. Hawks fans torturing him while he was at the line again with the countdowns. Is this kind of mental gamesmanship going to have an effect on the series, or have we seen the sum of what they can do with the counting just tonight?
Well, I thought it was interesting. You know, the Giannis shot 75% in the two games in Milwaukee to start this series. And I know that's a very small sample size. I agree, two games, but that was positive. And the rate that he was making them at, I think got Atlanta a little bit concerned enough that they sort of launched a counterintelligence operation to saturate the media with the fact that the league was not, or the referees were not calling the 10-second call. There was a couple of stories that popped up after game one when Giannis went 6 of 8. They wanted to nip his rhythm in the bud. The officials have not called the 10-second call yet, and I believe he was 6 of 13 at the line in game three, so he came backwards. But, you know, as long as Giannis is still showing aggression, this is the big difference between him and Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons, I don't know if I want to use the word fear, but his apprehension of his jumper and the apprehension of going to the foul line in some cases prevent him from even trying. Giannis is not afraid of trying. He is not afraid to throw up an air ball free throw. I'm not saying he likes it, but he's not afraid to have it happen. And so that does put him in a different situation. But at the end of the day, he's not efficient in late game situations, which really is why having a guy like Chris Middleton, having a guy like Jrue Holiday has been so vital for the Bucks.
You know, Brian, Pablo's not here, so you could say fear or choking or failing or disappointing or disappearing or any number of other things that I think would be apropos to the way Ben Simmons closed out that series.
Yeah, and he broke the hearts of all the Australian basketball fans who, I know this is a little bit inside basketball, but the Australians feel like they've got the best team they've ever had. They've never won a medal. They've been very close. They feel like they've got the best team they've ever had for Tokyo, and they were counting on Ben Simmons. Ben had indicated he was going to play, and this week told Team Australia he was not going to play, triggering a bunch of blowback in his own country. So it's been a rough week of criticism for Ben Simmons.
Letting people down across multiple continents is an impressive. Also, like, one of the only places he is effective is down under in the paint. So surprising that he couldn't even find a way to make himself useful there. Coming into this series, Brian, felt like the Hawks had the momentum, but now the shift has gone to the Bucks. What do you expect to see from these teams on Tuesday in game four?
Well, the one thing the Bucks have really focused on in games two and three is making Trae Young uncomfortable. And, you know, in game one, people will always remember that shoulder shimmy that he had where he, you know, sort of showed the Bucks up before hitting a three. And when he was asked about it after the game, he made kind of a joke, but at the same time, I think was being brutally honest, which is he said, I had so much time. And that was a real problem. I mean, Trae Young was brilliant, 48 points. I mean, just an absolute incredible performance, without question. But he had so much freedom of movement and space. And so the Bucks have absolutely changed their strategy the last two games, picking him up full court as he brings the ball up, denying him. So when he doesn't bring the ball up, you know, having one of their forwards come out and try to deny the pass to him so he's got to work a little bit harder. Really being physical, bumping him, pushing him around a little bit. Jrue Holiday is built for that. Holiday was all over Young in the second half when he played in game three. So this was a strategy that I was kind of surprised that the Knicks and Sixers didn't go to more, because, you know, he is a little bit undersized and he's a guy who's much like Steph Curry. He reminds me so much of Steph Curry and so much of what he does. And the book on Steph Curry, you know, especially in a playoff series, is make him get some bumps and bruises, make him feel you. And the Bucks have done that in games two and three, and I expect that to continue. We'll see how Trae, you know, answers that challenge, because the Bucks are equipped to cause him some physical discomfort, and they've made that a big point in how they're going to play going forward.
Okay, up next, how the Suns might be setting on the Clippers season.
Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
All right, Brian, we had all kind of offensive fireworks with the Bucks and Hawks, which was sort of a palate cleanser to Saturday in the Western Conference Finals. We had quite the opposite. Suns taking a 3-1 series lead after beating the Clippers 84-80. That 84 points being the fewest of any winning team this season, per ESPN stats and info. But a win's a win. The series has pretty much been all Suns all the time. What did you see from them in Game 4?
Well, the Suns just... they haven't played very well the last couple of games. As great as they were playing over the last month, getting to 9 in a row, you know, ever since Devin Booker got his, you know, nose broken in 3 places by running into Patrick Beverley's forehead, he has not really been the same player. And Chris Paul, he's made some impactful plays, but in the 2 games he's come back, he shot the ball very poorly. Certainly not the way he shot the ball in the last round. And that leads me to believe he's still coming back and getting rhythm. And so for the Clippers not to be able to take advantage and even this series or even be ahead, because, you know, the Clippers have to really be feeling like how much of a missed opportunity they have here. Because the reality is that they badly, badly miss Kawhi Leonard. If they had Kawhi Leonard, even if he was a little bit hobbled, I think they win both games 2 and 4, but they don't have him. And, you know, the Suns have gotten really good physical defense, particularly from DeAndre Ayton. Ayton is causing the Clippers all kinds of issues, and they haven't been able to get efficient scoring. Paul George is being relied on to provide a lot of their offense. And I think what we're seeing, Sarah, is that as good as Paul George is, and he's had a good playoff run, he is not the type of player that can carry a team through a playoff series of this magnitude. As soon as that MRI came back on Kawhi Leonard in the last series when the Clippers were in Utah and they found out that he was probably going to miss a significant period of time, that was a death blow to their season.
Let's talk about the Suns' ability to finish under Monty Williams. And we saw in this game that they had a pretty comfortable lead throughout until the fourth quarter. They let the Clippers back in, but they managed to still finish in a very ugly on both sides fashion. No one really won this game so much as one of the teams lost it. We got a series of missed free throws, some intentional, some unintentional. Let's go through that final sequence. It was maybe less than a minute. What went wrong for the Clippers, and why weren't they able to take advantage of another poor shooting game from the Suns?
They just couldn't execute. They couldn't execute their offense. Really, the entire second half, they just don't have shot creation. And Ayton has been a big key to that. He has been terrific defensively, playing angles, getting out there and defending on the perimeter and moving inside. They've just done a better job executing. And I really do think, as sad as it is to say, I really do think it's as simple as a turned knee for Kawhi Leonard. If Kawhi Leonard was out there, that is the exact type of game he is built to thrive in. And I think they would have scored a lot more than 80 points if he was in the game.
More missed free throws, a key again in this one. And the MVP of the game really was the cameraman who caught Steve Ballmer with those tight shots on his face as he drops his head watching Paul George miss another pair. What's going through his mind? We've seen that guy at the absolute apex of joy. I don't know that we've ever gotten an inside look at him feeling as dark and as low as he was in that moment.
Well, I think he is a pretty good optimist, and he certainly an ideal cheerleader. He used to do that when he was the CEO of Microsoft. They would they would introduce new products, and he would come out and literally run around the stage. It was quite the opposite of the way that Steve Jobs would introduce new products. Ballmer would be sweating through his shirt and screaming, and Steve Jobs would come out there in his black turtleneck, and he would just hold up and say, "This is the iPhone." So this is
who
Steve
Ballmer goes with the Howard Dean. I think it was known as the Dean Scream.
And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House. Yeah!
There was always a little bit of a Howard Dean vibe with Ballmer there.
That is true. So I think, you know, he has kept up his optimism, but the reality is this team is undermanned. And you can take a look at individual moments in the game, and I'm not saying that those don't matter. Of course they do. Even in this super team era, where we see teams that have multiple superstar players on them, no team that has lost their number one player has gotten themselves to the championship. And that's what we're seeing here. And, you know, it's 3-1. I mean, things can change, of course, but I think we're just seeing a team that's lost its margin for error. And that means that every single other thing matters so much more, including Paul George free throws.
Some oddities down the stretch. They didn't review the ball out of bounds that seemed almost exactly the same as a play earlier in the postseason that caused a lot of discussion. There were no threes in the fourth quarter made. Two teams that were proficient at three-point shooting all season in the postseason combined to go 9-for-51 from beyond the arc, 34.3% from the field. It was ugly across the board, and it was also strategic in ways that had people sort of wondering, is this best for the game? Is this best for the team? One of those being Coach Monty Williams directing the Suns to, at the end of these games, foul while they're up to force free throws instead of running the risk of giving up a buzzer beater. Do you like this play by Monty Williams?
This has been a trend that was, it may be more than this. I remember seeing it in the European League 20 years ago. Three-point shooting has become so good in today's day and age. Plus, players have become so good at drawing fouls on three-pointers that coaches have run the numbers and believe, in some cases, not every coach, that you're better off fouling before the guy can go shoot a three-pointer. And, you know, in this game, there was some wobbles back and forth, but generally it worked. You know, the Suns never really lost control, and the Suns can do that because they shoot 89% from the foul line in the clutch. 89%. Mm. Chris Paul hasn't missed a free throw in the clutch in weeks. And so when you know that you're going to put the ball in the hands of a guy who's going to get two free throws at the other end to keep the lead extended, it's easier to take that strategy. They believe that they, if it got to a free throw shooting contest, they were going to win it. And they do.
I want to ask you quickly about DeAndre Ayton. You mentioned his great play, but he's talked about the quote-unquote big bro type leadership from Chris Paul. And Chris Paul hasn't always had the reputation of a beloved teammate, despite having the respect of many in the league. And I wonder, what's different about Paul's role on the Suns? Or maybe is it the difference in the person he's leading in Ayton? What are you hearing about that relationship?
So I did a story in February on DeAndre Ayton. He was having a really good start to his season. He was already showing a lot of improvement in consistency playing with Chris Paul. And so for a week or so, I was watching every Suns game, and I had the feed where you could see the benches during the timeouts. And I am telling you, Sarah, every single timeout, Chris Paul is in DeAndre Ayton's ear. Whether they're both in the game or one's in and one's out, whether they're sitting, whether they're standing. I mean, a lot of times he's flat out yelling at him. And Monty Williams yells at him a lot. And the assistant coaches yell at him a lot. He is one of those guys where people are always yelling at him. And I asked him about it. I said, "How do you feel about that?" And he goes, "This is just who I am. I'm somebody who likes to be coached, and people know that." And I don't know if that's a 100% honest answer, because nobody likes to be yelled at. But I think that has irritated some of Chris Paul's previous teammates. They've gotten tired of it. They're tired of that attitude from Chris. And maybe Ayton, after 4 or 5 years, would feel the same way. But he has really embraced it. and he has learned all kinds of nuance. You know, one of the things that Chris Paul has really taught him about is angles. You know, the way that you angle your body setting a screen, the way that you angle your body as you go for a rebound. So he really dug into that with Ayton and really held him accountable as the season went along. And in a vital moment, in the last couple of minutes of that game four, Monty Williams called a timeout and they really needed a basket. And he called a pick and roll with Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton.
Chris Paul on the drive. Paul throws it up for Ayton. He throws it down. Beautifully executed.
And it was an absolute mastery. The timing is perfect. By the time the Clippers even see the play, Ayton's got the ball in midair and he's bringing down a dunk that gave them the lead. That right there, that play, was a personification of what this year has been about. Chris Paul working on chemistry, teaching him the finer points, and then getting it executed. That right there was DeAndre Ayton and the Chris Paul partnership bearing fruit at the most important time.
I want to ask you, because you talked about the Suns having two decidedly bad games. They shot 24.4% in the second half of this. That's the second worst field goal percentage in the second half of a playoff win over the last 25 postseasons. And that follows up another dismal shooting night in this series. Is there any concern here because they're up 3-1? Is winning games enough to say this is not a problem we need to worry about moving forward?
You know, one of the things about the Suns is they just do the details really well. Monty Williams, when he became the head coach, he gave every player in the locker room last year a large coin bucket like you would get back in the old days in Vegas when they still used coins at the slots. And it said details on it. And it was a symbolic thing that he wanted everybody to understand that details add up like so many coins. And I do believe that it's one of the things that is why they're so good in close games, is because they really do the details well. So, yes, Booker and Chris Paul have been in slumps, but Mikal Bridges has been so good defensively, and DeAndre Ayton has been getting rebounds and playing his angles correctly, and Cameron Johnson, their second-year guy off the bench, has hit a couple of really big shots and gotten a couple of really big defensive stops. Jay Crowder has been terrific defensively and is through one of the best passes you'll ever see to Ayton for that dunk and to win game two.
Crowder looking, throws it, alley-oop! Oh! Ayton puts it down! He puts it down! It's over! DeAndre Ayton with the biggest shot of his life. That's just a perfect pass.
The Suns have gotten to 3-1 because Kawhi Leonard is hurt and because they've concentrated on the details. And that's a great position for them to be in, and they understand that this is an amazing opportunity, and they're really trying to take advantage of it.
You know, Brian, I do have to say, as someone who has worn the face mask that Devin Booker has, who had her nose broken in multiple places in a field hockey game, it steams up, it's sweaty, it's uncomfortable, it affects your vision, it pushes down on an already swollen nose. So it's a good sign, at least for the basketball side of things, that he felt comfortable taking it off in that game. Maybe not for future modeling campaigns with Kendall Jenner if it gets hit again and cannot be fixed aesthetically. But I do think I expect to see him picking back up his game the more he gets comfortable.
It has been pointed out that he may have connections to good plastic surgeons. He did actually say, reportedly, when he took off the mask and threw it to the bench, he told the trainers, if I have to get a surgery after the season, so be it.
Well, if he comes back with a giant butt instead of a fixed nose, we'll know he asked the wrong sister.
That's funny. It's not like getting Ronnie Lott getting his finger cut off, but it's, you know, respectable.
So we know then tonight's game five, everything on the line for the Clippers. Suns also looking to make their first finals appearance since 93. It would also be the first NBA finals appearance for Chris Paul, something, you know, none of us have ever mentioned over and over and over again. In fact, he wasn't really keen to talk about the team being up 3-1.
You have done something no other team has done, which is go up 3-1 on the Clippers in a playoff
Yeah,
series.
I don't want to talk about 3-1.
This
I've got
postseason.
A lot of good experiences with that.
I understand. I get that. I will.
Brian, do you think the series ends tonight?
The Suns really better hope so. The Clippers are a team that has shown the ability to align things and get very hot. They are probably, you know, even when they had Kawhi, they were one of the hardest teams for me to gauge and understand that I've ever seen in my 18 years covering the NBA. I just really didn't know what I was going to get for them night to night. Brilliant, unstoppable, breathtaking play, or big giant letdowns. And so if you take the series back 3-2 to LA, you give them a lot of life. I mean, this is one of the reasons why they play these series 2-2, 1-1-1, because they want game six in the team with the lower seeds home court, because it increases the chances of there being a seven-game series, which is what the NBA wants for every series. And so the way the structure of the playoffs is, if you get an opportunity to close out at home in game five, you really, really got to do it. And, you know, as I've said, the Suns have not played well the last couple of games. Booker has not been himself. Chris Paul has not been himself. You know they're going to come back at some point. And if that comes back in game five in front of that crowd in Phoenix, which is really into these games, it could be over quickly.
Brian Windhorst, thanks for the time. I will be back listening regularly to Hoop Collective. I won't be able to talk directly to you. I'll have to just listen. That's my go-to throughout the postseason and will continue to be, so keep up the great work. I'm Sarah Spain, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.